never to be free. The whole of nothing is the same one that I've been. There's place, you keep going to be real. There's place, there's place, there's place. Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, Chautauqua, Munayang, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah De A, recording from home on Thursday, December 16th, 2021. On tonight's show, a remix of sorts, reviewing past conversations for excellent shows coming up this weekend. My guests, director Ellen David on Four Anglos surviving the COVID apocalypse.
It's quick and dirty.
Our headline, our poster said, you've masked, you've vaxxed, now it's time to laugh. That's kind of our motto.
And I'll include some music from Bowser and Blue, who will be on stage at this show this weekend. As well, the Siegel Center goes to the dogs with Superdogs the Musical, director Sarah Rodriguez.
Coming back from this interminable intermission, being back in the room is so beautiful and so meaningful and so like, oh yes, this is home in many ways.
And animal trainer Danielle Pichette on her dogs start on the stage.
They're just like, okay, I mean, we're good. We're working with that lady and it's okay, mom, stay aside. We're going to just play with her now. And
before we begin, an update. While COVID cases have continued to rise in Montreal and in Quebec, including more cases of the new Omicron variant and a new travel advisory against international trips for the upcoming month, and as we head into holiday season, a time of rest and celebration for many, the public health director in Montreal has advised just yesterday that people start limiting their contacts. But as of recording early today, there are still no plans to restrict the number of people who can attend live performances, nor any plans to scale back live performances. The current rules still apply, of course, including vaccine passports and wearing masks. Of course, you know your own sense of security and safety best, so it'll be up to you as of now to decide whether you're still comfortable going into public, but these events are still going on. There's lots to see and do if you want to support local arts and, of course, enjoy local theater. So with that specter hanging over our heads, let's distract ourselves a little bit with something topical, though. I'm going to play you a new song from the comedic duo Bowser and Blue. Both perform as part of Surviving the COVID Apocalypse this weekend in Westmount at Victoria Hall. Here is In the Red Zone.
We're going through the second wave
in the red zone.
Making sure that we behave
in the red zone.
We all know what we should do. No one wants to get that flu. Thank God for the SAQ
in the red zone.
Can't go out and make the scene
in the red zone.
I sit at home with my flat screen
in the red zone.
Oh,
doing what the premier says as life loses all its fizz. I don't know what day it is
in the red zone.
It would be oh so sweet
in the red zone
to go out somewhere to eat
in the red zone
but bars and restaurants are closed. No one wants to be exposed. Stick a Q-tip up my nose
in the red zone.
Isolation can bring folks together. If so, that could be the silver lining. Then again, that all depends on weather. It doesn't turn out like it did in The Shining.
Thank you.
friends are hard to recognize
in the red zone.
With masks, you only see their eyes
in the red zone.
Saw someone I thought I knew, patted her on her frou-frou. Now I'm on hashtag me too
in the red zone.
How much more time will we spend
in the red zone?
Does it look like this will end
in the red zone?
When daylight savings ends, it means we turn our clocks back, but in dreams I turn back to 2019
in the red zone.
That was Rick Blue and George Smith, musical duo Bowser and Blue, with their song In the Red Zone. They worked with Ellen David, the actor, director, and now Anglo Wrangler. That is the funny new title she has earned overseeing a comedy show starring four iconic Montreal wits, the aforementioned Bowser and Blue, longtime Gazette columnist Josh Fried, and Terry Mosher, also known as Aislinn, the acclaimed editorial cartoonist for the Gazette. After entertaining audiences at Lac-Brome Theatre and the St. Jack's Center in downtown Montreal, the four are back this weekend at Victoria Hall in Westmount. Yes, they all have gray hair and are into their golden years, but these four funny guys have been making the English community in Montreal laugh for decades through language issues and referendums and the general silliness of living in this province. They first assembled in 2005 as the Four Anglos of the Apocalypse, then in 2008 with a show called The 25th Century Returns to Canada, and 13 years later they return with Four Anglos Surviving the COVID Apocalypse. These guys are all pretty busy. Josh Fried has a new series of essays out. Mosher has a compilation of COVID comics from around the world, along with a new Canada Post stamp devoted to his legacy. And Ellen David is the one orchestrating this show. I caught it at the St. Jack's Center last month, which, by the way, is the church where Terry Mosher, Aislinn, was baptized over 80 years ago. I found it charming and a chance to see four of the funniest Anglos we've ever produced. We have Josh going through some of his essays. We have Bowser and Blue playing their tunes. And Terry Mosher is reviewing some of the cartoons from around the world that really crystallized, showed what the world was going through, even though we were all spread out and in different places. A lot of the experiences people had were similar from country to country, staying home, getting tested, getting sick, the health workers, and all the amazing work they did to save people infected with COVID. I found it charming, as I said, and very funny. So no doubt with the specter of COVID still hanging over the holiday season for a second year in a row, this will either feel perhaps very fresh for you, very relevant, or perhaps terrifying. I'll leave it up to you. I did speak with Ellen David a few weeks ago, just before the show opened at the Theatre Lac-Brome in Knowlton. Here is our conversation as she was heading into a very, very busy weekend.
Welcome back to Upstage, Ellen. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Great, thank you. Reaching you just before the big opening weekend of the Four Anglo, I guess the full title is Four Anglo Horsemen of the COVID Apocalypse.
No. The title of this particular incarnation of the Four Anglos is Four Anglos Surviving the COVID Apocalypse.
Now, four very talented, very funny men. Well-known in our community, but I mean, I got to imagine there's a lot of ego going on here. How do you handle these four guys and get them to put together a show that's going to run on time and make people laugh?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because in my bio, we had like little quick blurbs about each of us, and mine is called Four Anglo Wrangler. That's what I do. And and I'll have a one-woman show after called Surviving the Four Anglos. But no, I mean, listen, they are who they are. They are very well known. They are incredibly talented. They're gifted individuals. And, you know, they have a unique perspective on the world, and they tell it from their, you know, with their art form. Josh with writing and columns and films, and Terry obviously with cartoons, and Bowser and Blue with their music. And sort of combine it all together in a moment like this, when all of us universally are reflecting on what we've experienced. I think it's such a valuable time for this kind of material and for these four artists to get together and tell that story.
I think there certainly is a lot to reflect on and kvetch about, to complain about. What to you are some of the principal kind of anxieties or criticisms that really shine through that you think are really going to hit home with audiences right now?
Well, I think what happens is the way, you know, I've created an opening soundscape where we put ourselves in the context of where we were in March 2020 when all this began. It's like breaking news. We interrupt this, you know, something was beginning back then. And the story of that we're going to see on stage is going to follow that journey, not necessarily chronologically, but it's going to highlight different areas and elements that we all went through as we collectively took this, you know, we didn't know how long this winding road would be, but we you know, we were moving down this path. So I think we address a lot of the things. What is it at the beginning? You know, how long is it going to be? The opening song is "This Won't Last." And, you know, of course, we know all these, you know, a couple of years almost later, it did last and it, you know, renewed itself and came back, you know, back with a vengeance in a different way. But through then, we've all individually and collectively made steps to figure out how to live with us. Those of us who did survive, who are still here, some are surviving. I wouldn't say people are thriving. I think it's taken a toll. It is something that we've had to grapple with. The word pivot came up. We've learned to do things in a different way. We're trying to figure out how many of those things are we going to bring forward with us as we move forward, you know, Zoom meetings and working from home and all of this virtual world that we've found ourselves in. In terms of including the arts as well, right? When we had to turn around and present work and, you know, artists were dying to create, we ended up doing a lot of it virtually. Some people have had a glut of it and are not interested in seeing that anymore. And other people say, oh, this is a great option for us. So it opened up a whole other world for us as it was shutting down another part of our world. So I think we take that journey with these gentlemen. And when we did a workshop a couple of months ago, and we had a very small invited audience. And what we found interesting is that it's funny. They're all very funny, but it's very moving as well. Some of the songs, for instance, there's one the Bowser and Blues sing about unsung heroes, as Terry is illustrating the truckers and the healthcare workers and the teachers and the suppliers. And I mean, just get shivers now thinking about it and what all of those people were providing for us as we were struggling to, you know, have our needs met. I think it's reflective of this whole experience. And initially, the title was Four Anglos Survive the COVID Apocalypse, but we've changed it to surviving because we're not out of it, right? COVID exists and COVID is affecting our lives.
We are definitely not through it yet, but you know, it's still a good point to look back and reflect at any point, we'd say, right? Even though the light is still, we can see the light now. Yes. I'm speaking with Ellen David, who is the director of the Four Anglo Horsemen.
No, there's no horsemen. They're on a horse. Four Anglos Surviving the COVID Apocalypse. There's my phone ringing, I think, for ticket sales because we're almost sold out. But I'll let
yeah. Well, let's ask about the let's discuss the anticipation, the reaction from people knowing that you're putting on these four comedy stars together.
Yes, people are really excited. We were fortunate in that we're presenting it in a moment where, as of October 8th, the rules have changed. We're allowed to open fully, so we can fill our 161-seat, very intimate theater, and we are filling it up. We're sold out for Saturday's matinee at Theatre Lac Brome, and we have very few tickets left for Saturday night and Sunday matinee. And, you know, we have to do vax passports, obviously, so everything requires extra labor and extra care to make sure that people are safe. You know, sanitizing, hand cleansing and washing. They talk about that in the show. They do a song about that. And then people have to wear their mask completely during the experience. Initially, when we were welcoming half audiences or having, you know, 2 meters between bubbles, people were able to take off their masks when everybody was social distance, but now everybody has to wear the mask. So there is great anticipation, and also we will be taking it to Montreal. We're going to Centre Saint-Jacques after this run and maybe onwards after. We'll see how it goes. And so I think people are eager. And what was really beautiful about this experience of doing the workshop and having a few individuals and now seeing that the audience is expanding to we can house more people and entertain more people and move more people is the experience of talking about something like this that separated us, that shut down our industry, especially our industry, as well as many, many others. They do a song called No Gigs, No Gigs at All, where, you know, they, and Terry is illustrating it beautifully with cartoons. And Josh is describing the experience, and it's illustrated by Terry's cartoons. I lost my train of thought there for a second. I'm thinking of just the show and so many things. The collective experience of being in that room, bearing witness to four, you know, really perceptive individuals commenting on the experience, and then being able to be in the room and witness all of this. You know, Josh writes his columns for the Gazette. He writes, you know, whatever he's writing is, he's not interacting necessarily with the readers. And here's a chance to express himself and to have somebody really firsthand, you know, hear it, see it, palpably feel it. And just that experience is so moving that we're somewhat through it. You know, we are survivors, and we can tell that story, and we can tell it to people who are there live to hear it.
He's leaping off the page, so to speak.
Literally.
So how does this work to bring in a cartoon? You've given us a little hint by talking about how Terry Moshar Aislinn's cartoons will be writ large on the stage. But essentially, you've got two performers who are used to being live and bringing that persona. Josh is a writer. Terry, he writes in a way, but he's an artist. Yes. Like, how does that come together for a visual performance?
Well, we have, what I've done is I've created three zones for the performers. And plus we have the zone of the screen, where that's our access to all the cartoons. Josh is sort of a narrator, and he's taking us through the steps, and Bowser and Blue are commenting through song. And Terry, of course, is illustrating with his cartoons. It's not only his cartoons, by the way, he has been blessed to have over 100 cartoons from 38 different nations contributed to the show, as well as to a book that he has coming up about all this experience. One of them being, as a matter of fact, Montrealer Barry Blitt, who I've known from way back, grew up in the same neighborhood, and he won the Pulitzer Prize recently. He does cartoon covers for The New Yorker.
The New Yorker, yeah.
Yeah, so we go between the different performers as we tell the story and the journey and the different sections. And right center stage is a 4x3 ratio screen. So the cartoons are sized properly. It's not like a movie where there'll be empty space and that kind of letterbox ratio, but it is very, it's been sized and worked and tweaked to honor those cartoons. And one of the, for instance, Josh will give his raps or his, you know, his talks or do his section, and Terry is illustrating. And we're lighting it as well to enhance the experience. And Bowser and Blue will sing, and Terry's illustrating. And Terry speaks as well. Aislinn also has his own contributions verbally with different for different moments as he's, and he is the one who's controlling the cartoons and all the images and timing everything. So everybody has an interplay, and everybody is propelling the story forward with their own unique style of how they contribute to it through song, through images, and through word, spoken word.
I'm so excited to see that actual interplay happening, because I bet it's really magic on stage.
Yes.
And speaking with Ellen David, who is the director of The Four Anglos Survive the COVID Apocalypse, also artistic and executive director at Théâtre Lac Brome, Ellen, getting ready for opening weekend. I'm curious to know if everyone gets along. Do we have like a paisible situation where these guys are all like comrades in arms, or is it like the Beatles where there's good times and bad times? Because I know that there could be some orneriness, I would expect. I've witnessed some of it from time to time with these fellows, but or do they get along like a house on fire?
Well, I mean, as I said, I want to survive the Four Anglos, so I can't reveal too much. But, you know, they're all so established and so expert in their field that they all have their opinions about how they, you know, things should move. The script, this, they've worked on this for, you know, over a year. There was an idea to kind of come back as the Four Anglos, as this entity that they have, and comment on the COVID experience. So things have been tweaked, things have been shortened, things have been added, things have been cut. So they've been working together. But generally speaking, everyone is here to give the best experience to the audience and to tell this story in a way. So, yeah, like I said, I'm the Anglo Wrangler. I'm finding a way that everybody's honored, everybody has a say, and that we can move forward and, you know, and get on stage.
Are you the only person who could pull this off? Because I feel like this is a very special job that you're undertaking.
That's very, I don't know, Sarah. I have no, I mean, you know, who knows? I don't know who, you know, I'm the one that, you know, Josh asked me, I guess it was not this summer, but the summer before, at some point said to me, hey, we're thinking of coming back as a Four Angles, but we have an idea. He first said, I have an idea. We want to pitch to you. So we all got on a Zoom and we talked about it, and it, you know, it started then. And so it was fun to think that you're kind of living this experience, but at the same time, there's a creative outlet for it that I'm able to participate in. And really, I mean, I'm just, it's all of their work and their hard work and what they've done and what they brought to it. And I'm just sort of trying to compose it and give them an environment and, you know, direct them where I can, but they are, you know, they're experts in their field and they know what they're doing. What I did is create zones for them, as I mentioned, that sort of represent them individually. We can't necessarily do a set, and there's not a lot of, it's not a play. It's a different kind of play. And so Josh, you know, he's got a film at one point, he talks about his messy room and his messy office. So I've tried to create an environment that really would illustrate the messy writer, and then there's an artistic zone that Terry's in. We're a cartoonist at work, and we see some of his material. And of course, Bowser and Blue have toured for years. Theirs is a musical zone with all their instruments and their posters and their touring jackets and their. So it's kind of three unique spaces on stage. That's something we can create at Lac Brome, because it is a theater space. St. Jack's has a different kind of appeal in that it's an incredibly beautiful church. It's actually where Terry Mosher was baptized. So there's that unique tie-in. It's lovely that we have that connection. And, you know, we're going to figure it out. I have Kelsey Ray, who's my production coordinator, working with me, and we're going to figure out how we can translate that experience to this other space and stage. And we'll, you know, whatever that, but it's already so beautiful and so interesting and so, you know, apocalyptic in a way in its evocation.
Now, they had performed together previously, right? I don't know how far back that was.
They, I'm trying to remember exactly the dates. I think, you know, maybe 4 to 5 years. They did the Four Anglos with the Horsemen of the whatever that, you know, survive them. I can't remember the titles exactly. And then there was another one about connected to Quebec and Canada. And they premiered them here at Theatre Lac Brome, and then they went on to do them at Centaur and other spaces. So it's nice to have them back, certainly, to do their Four Anglos production here at this space, and then to move forward. So yes, they have done this before. Terry and Josh do book tours and meetings and signings. And of course, Bowser and Blue appear. We had Bowser and Blue here not long ago on our stage, and they're favorites in the area. But to bring them all together again for the third time as Four Anglos, I think is pretty special.
And is it like getting the game back together? Like once they're all together in the same room again, it's kind of just picking up like no time has passed?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they're always in touch, and, you know, Bowser and Blue are always, they have a relationship, obviously working together on their material. And I mean, I think they have a shorthand of how they like to work and who does what. And, you know, everybody funnels their material. It goes through Terry so that he can see what he wants to illustrate with. And and then, you know, we work it out. We think maybe that's too long. This is so then it becomes a matter of really piecing a script together and finding the best way to. But then, you know, after a workshop, they went off and recognized, you know, I gave notes and we had some feedback, and then we're adjusting, you know, at that point they went off and did their own thing and, you know, eliminated some material, shortened things, and then coming up with a version that we even made some tweaks yesterday in terms of the order of things and what we want to say, and cutting some cartoons here, maybe adding one there. And so we'll see tonight. You know, we started yesterday. Today we have another rehearsal at 2:00, and then tonight we'll sort of do a run through of the piece. And then tomorrow we have our first audience. So it's quick and dirty. Our headline, our poster said, "You've masked, you've vaxxed. Now it's time to laugh." That's kind of our motto.
Ellen, thank you for taking us behind the scenes of the Four Anglos Survive the COVID Apocalypse. Much
surviving, surviving,
surviving.
Yeah, we're about to add that. Yeah.
Surviving the COVID Apocalypse. Enjoy this weekend. Do we say break a leg if you're director as well? Is that part
sure?
Of
you,
the,
I'll take. Yeah. I'll take anything I can get.
Thank you so much.
A pleasure once again to be talking to you.
That was Ellen David, the director of Four Anglos Surviving the COVID Apocalypse. You can catch the Four Anglos at Victoria Hall in Westmount this weekend, Friday, December 17th at 7:30, December 18th at 2 and 7:30, and December 19th at 2. Tickets are available online at fouranglos.eventbrite.ca, and that's four, the number four, anglos.eventbrite.ca. There will also be paper tickets available at Victoria Hall for sale. I'm Sarah Day, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. And just for fun, here is Bowser and Blue again, another song from their show this weekend. It's quite topical, Santa Super Spreader.
I am just a normal dad, and at this time of year, I like to take the kids to Santa Claus for the Christmas cheer. So I got out all their hats and coats, but they just shook their heads. I asked them, what's the problem? And this is what they said. Santa is a super spreader. Sorry, Dad, it's true. We didn't want to tell you this, but now it's time you knew. There's more than only Christmas spirit Santa Claus will share. He should be staying home, instead he's going everywhere. 200 million households he visits east to west. He makes the other super spreaders totally impressed. And don't forget, with Santa, there's no guarantee that any of his reindeer have herd immunity. It's Super Spreader Santa with his Super Spreader sled. Rudolph is infected too, that's why his nose is red. We'll have a happy holiday this year on our own, and stay away from Santa, the Super Spreader gnome. If we sat upon his lap when we've had our go, you'd have to wipe us down with Lysol from head to toe. His jolly, beaming, bearded face is totally mask-free. Santa thinks his bushy beard counts as PPE. Every year at Christmas, he flies here down south. Spreads germs with every ho-ho-ho that comes out of his mouth. Christmas used to be a time of merriment and fun, but now when we see Santa, Dad, we're gonna run. It's Super Spreader Santa with his Super Spreader sled. Rudolph is infected too, that's why his nose is red. Health Canada advises, look after yourself. So stay away from Santa, the Super Spreader elf.
That was Bowser and Blue with their song Santa Super Spreader. You can see them this weekend at Victoria Hall in Westmount performing Four Anglos Survive the COVID Apocalypse, fouranglos.eventbrite.ca. That's the number four, anglos.eventbrite.ca. Have you ever attended the Superdog Show as a kid, or maybe with the little kids in your life? The mega successful company brings show dogs, their trainers, and their tricks to audiences around North America. Over 30 million viewers and counting, and they have had a couple of TV specials to boot. But you might not know that it is also a Made in Montreal story. It started out in the city over 40 years ago. Superdog's chief operating officer, Leonard Chase, and his co-writer, John Halpin, have created a simple but timeless story. A girl and her beloved dog, Chloe and Bear. They want to join the Superdogs, and they'll do whatever it takes to get on stage. So which Montreal theater is going to the dogs by staging what they call the world's first ever canine musical? It's the Siegel Center. The show has live musicians, over 20 talented dogs, a big cast, and overseeing it all is director Sarah Rodriguez, a Montrealer splitting her time between Colorado and California. Sarah and one of the animal trainers, Danielle Pichette, joined me last month to talk about the challenges of working with live animals, why we love dogs so much, and the many, many puns involved with Superdogs. The show continues this weekend. You have until December 19th to have fun with the dogs. Here is our conversation.
Welcome to Upstage, Danielle and Sarah. Thank you both so much for being here. How are you both today?
Good.
I'm excited.
So these are two very different strands of entertainment coming together, live dog performances and live musical theater. I want to hear from both of you. What are people's reactions when you say, I'm working on Super Dogs, the musical? Sarah, you go first.
Oh, gosh. It's usually come again. honestly, I get a lot of, every time I try to explain the show, because I find myself having to say, we're not doing cats, but with dogs. It's not, that's not the brand. And when I explain it, I do have to tell people, like, yes, I do hear myself. I am hearing what I'm saying. And this is, and I said what I said. I mean, there are two reactions. There's also the group of people who know Super Dogs and who've been fans of Super Dogs or who grew up with them. So they're really excited and want to know how theater fits into it. Like, they're kind of like, okay, so is there a story? Are they actually singing? Are the dogs singing? And then you've got the musical theater people who ask, okay, but are there actual dogs? But then are there humans too? And then what do the dogs? Yeah, it's great. It's just so fun to try to explain it. And in the end, I'm like, you're just going to have to come see it.
Yeah, that's the answer.
Really?
So Sarah, coming to the musical theater, Danielle, as a Super Dogs trainer, coming from a different kind of performance world, what do people say to you?
Actually, you were asking about the reaction of people, and for now I'm still working on my own reaction about all that, and because it almost does not make sense to have a dog doing like acting on a live stage, and I'm still like having this thinking to me and happening, so I haven't like even got the time to discuss. I mean, like, putting those words in the same sentence, like saying that my dogs are in a live musical play in that same sentence, it's almost like so crazy to see this coming to life and happening. I'm still realizing it, and it's very it's such a challenge. It's fun, I mean, but I can totally understand that people don't get it, because I'm not sure I totally get it myself now.
I love that frankness. So let's just get this out of the way once and for all, though. The dogs are not singing, correct?
No. Well, sometimes they're not supposed to.
But sometimes there's music and you get a little howl and they match pitch, and we're okay with that.
So these dogs, though, are trained performers. Danielle, how much training does it take to get a dog ready to perform in front of a paying audience?
Well, honestly, I'm from the wrangling on movie and TV sets background. So that's what I do for a living. But usually you're going to just do more takes and end up with what you want. And it's going to be done. But now it's the same. But on stage, and it's not like I can stand behind the camera because there's none, so I kind of have to be out of the picture totally, so it's quite a challenge to train this. But when we did our first tumble through, and I was looking at my dog being there and already being so good with all of what was happening and the singing and the people dancing with props and staying there and not looking for me for direction or like what's going on, and just going with all of that so good, I was like, you know, it's all the past almost 12 years of all of what we did, the shows, the movies, the travel, the trials, the training, it's all blended right there, and it's coming to this. But it's a lifetime of a super well-filled dog life that makes that possible, I believe. You know, it's not just training, it's all of the dog I've been through and went through, and now it's just like all blending together and making this happen.
Maybe that is the
yeah
That is the voice of Danielle Pichette, who is an animal trainer involved with Super Dogs, a musical coming to the Siegel Center. Sarah Rodriguez is the director. Sarah, so tell us about the story. We do exist in the Super Dogs universe for this tale, right? No pun intended.
We have realized how many like dog puns there are in natural speech through working with this show. Yeah, we do exist in the Super Dogs world, and we actually have a really like a lovely way in. There's this young girl named Chloe, played by Zoe Brown, who's like the star of all stars. She has this small dog, and she wants her dog to be a super dog. She's a big fan. And so she sneaks into the rehearsal hall and kind of makes her way into becoming a super dog trainer. So we actually get an interesting way into super dogs and that world and what it is. We get a really good introduction.
For you as a director, like I know that in Hollywood, in film, there's this adage of you don't work with animals and children. Obviously this is live theater, which doesn't make it any less complicated, but you have child actors, dog performers, and live musicians on stage. When you're working on this as the director, like, are you thinking about all the ways it could go wrong or like
all day, every day,
everything that could happen on stage?
I think honestly, that's just part of the job, is thinking of all those things. And it's not just what could go wrong, but I think my job is really like, how do we move forward? You know, just how do you adapt to things? And that is part of the magic of live theater, is things, not even when they're as accurate as possible, there's always a little breath that's different, you know? So like, that's part of the job, to think about that, to think about the possibilities and how things could be different and how to adapt. So I'm constantly thinking about that. So in that way, this show is not that different. Like, that is always there. It's just that there is this new element to my world that I didn't understand, and that I don't want to say I fully understand it yet, because like Danielle said, it's a lifetime of work. So I definitely don't want to say, oh, I get it now. I don't. I have an iota, and I have the expertise of people like Danielle in the room for that. The same way that you have a music director who has the musical expertise when you work on a musical. So yeah, it's like, it's the same, but it is a piece I knew less of, because I missed dog training class when I was going through theater school.
So I want to ask both of you what rehearsals are like. Is there I can just imagine there's so much energy in the room. You know, is it the kind, and you know, is rehearsal different or weird because you have all these different elements at play? And not weird in a bad way, like weird in a good way.
Yes and no. I think there's also another, you know, this unspoken element of we're in a pandemic, you know? So there's a lot of energy, and to me, a lot of emotional energy, because coming back from this interminable intermission, like being back in the room is so beautiful and so meaningful. And so like, oh yes, this is home in many ways. So I think that has fueled a lot of energy to be able to do a big show like this after the trauma, you know, and still in it. I'm not trying to say the pandemic's over just because, you know, we're over it, but it's not over. So there's that element. And I mean, you've got 24 dogs around. Like, yeah. There's no one is not smiling. You can't. Yeah. There are 24 dogs running around. And at the very least, and of course, they're not all there all the time, but, you know, we certainly have two at the very least always there. Yeah, the energy is lovely. And it's not that strange. It's not that strange, but there is that one more element that we have to check in and know that we're not the experts. So Danielle has answered a lot of my dumb questions.
Danielle, over to you. What's rehearsal like? What's your viewpoint behind the scenes?
I think I approach it a lot like when we work on movie sets, because we need to find like the vantage point on how to make it look the way we want. without me really being here, and how can you, can we like make that happen and work the magic around like having that dog with all of what he knows, do what we expect from him and make it look good, because it's not just like the end result, but the whole feel about the play. So I'm pretty good with that. I mean, the energy is different when we just work with my own dogs, and it's more like two more actors rehearsing with the other actors than when it's like the big show with all the dogs and all the energy, and especially like that super dog show part where it's meant to be so crazy and active. But when it's more about the play, for me, I feel kind of home. I'm not too surprised with that, but it's very nice to have all those very talented and professional person, but like Sarah said, like everyone is smiling, everyone is there. I mean, the dog are not just a prop being a disturbance or a problem in the room. It's part of it, and everyone's working with it so nice, and it's fun. It's very fun. It's very motivating, and it's more not natural, but it's less weird than we could have thought it would be. Like, I mean, it's just like, okay, let's do this. That, and I believe that since my dog stepped into that so nicely and fast, we're not out of the woods. We still have to rehearse so much, but I mean, a lot of questions I had in my mind before starting that have been like solved and quickly, like they're just like, okay, I mean, we're good, we're working with that lady, and it's okay, mom, stay aside, we're gonna just play with her now. And so all of that being already like done, I mean, it's very fun, and we get to enjoy like working on just like the tiny diddles and make it even better. And but there's a lot that is good now, and that we can just enjoy the moment more because a few questions are out of the picture now.
I bet a lot of your questions are just about what you were saying, is like the dog being comfortable and being like in a safe space and adjusting to a new reality. But it sounds like from what you're telling me, like they're happy to be there. Like they're enjoying their experience.
My dogs, they love to work. They really need the job. That's why they don't eat up my whole house when we're home and not doing anything, because when we're doing stuff very motivating for them, and they get the satisfaction and to feel like they are doing something that makes a difference. They succeed because, I mean, even when it's not perfect, we make them feel that they're getting there and they're succeeding in what they do. So they are content with themselves, and they really need that. And Squat especially lives for the crowd. He lives for the clap, you know. He needs to be cheered on. I mean, even when people are clapping for someone else, he feels it's for him, and he's just like, I guess it's for me, and he's so happy. And so yeah, I mean, those specific dogs that doing this role loves it and live for that, live for doing things and being active and the result, and the having people like in awe with them, with all what they do. And we try not to laugh too much when they do like silly things, but they know what they can do to make us make us laugh and almost cry too, right?
I feel like we could take everything you just said and put actor in for dog, because we have a lot of stereotypes about actors who need to be, you know, in front of an audience and have a lot of energy and validation too. But I say that in good spirits. I'll leave the last word to you, Sarah. I know that Lisa Rubin, the executive director at the Siegel Center, when she announced this, and she knew it would come out of left field for a lot of people, but she said dogs have been a lifeline for many people, pandemic puppies, people acquired pets. Hopefully they're still holding on to their pets now that things are going back to normal, that dogs have been a source of comfort in a really difficult time. Is that something you've been thinking about while working on the show?
Oh, it's been very present.
Well, I'm a huge animal lover.
You have to be.
Yes. Right. But absolutely. Like, I think the connection that, especially in this time of isolation, like the connection with between human and animal and in company, the love, I mean, I'm trying not to say the words unconditional love, because it's one of the songs in the play, but I guess I just should say it and be on the nose. But that connection you have with an animal, like, it's unparalleled, you know, when you connect with, and especially, yeah, I think especially in this time when everybody has, if you had animals before, like, you were home all the time. And so we had, you know, our relationship with them and became much stronger. And if you didn't, many of us, like many people, got animals. They're not just a source of comfort and of therapy, and they're incredible for mental health. You know, there are just so many benefits to that connection. And so I think it's the perfect time to be doing a show like this. I think it's in a way an ode and an homage and I have a sort of reverence to, you know, animals. Thank you for keeping us sane. Yeah. And loving us no matter what.
It's for sure going to be a cathartic and heartfelt performance, that's for sure, especially for people who are just coming back to the stage as well. Thank you both so much, Sarah and Danielle, for taking the time. I wish I could be there with you in rehearsal, because it sounds like such a blast, but we're so glad that you could take us behind the scenes. Thank you both.
Thank you.
That was Superdogs the Musical director Sarah Rodriguez and animal trainer Danielle Pichette. The show runs at the Siegel until Sunday, December 19th. Tickets are $68 with discounts for groups, seniors, students, and those under 30. Tickets at 514-739-7944, siegelcenter.org. The human cast includes Zoe Brown of the Hockey Sweater Musical, Dakota Jamal Wellman, and Trevor Barrett, among others. And of course, the Superdogs, who all have incredible names, so I will list them here. Spade and Squat, who share the role of Bear, plus Bravo, Champagne, Dakari, Fabio, Halo, Jamboree, Joan Jett, Luca, Monster, Mordecai, Ulala, Pigeon, Raven, Razzle, Retro, Zambuca, Skello, Sprite, Tesla, Wonder Woman, Zephyr, and Zuma. You can see, I think, a combination of all of them at the shows. I did see it last Sunday, and it was tremendous. It was a lot of fun to walk out of the theater and to hear so much. There's a lot of cheering for the dogs, and there's a lot of energy that comes off the audience. So you kind of just let go of all your like COVID anxiety and start cheering for these really cute dogs performing their tricks and their like races and their competitions. It's a lot of fun. Siegelcenter.org, Superdogs the Musical. Before I let you go for the evening, let's revisit some of the interviews from last week, December the 9th, because the shows that we discussed on last week are all ongoing through the next couple of days. I spoke with Sophie Elisad, who is an acclaimed costume designer, much in demand in Montreal, and she's making her directorial debut with an online inventive reading of Antioch, which is by a Quebec writer named Sarah Bertillon. This is for Talisman Theatre, which does English language premieres of Quebec plays, and we meet, as you're about to hear from Sophie, a mother-daughter pair in a story that's also rooted in Greek myth, the story of Antigone. The play's been around for a couple of years, and Sophie also had to grapple a little bit with the intention of Sarah Bertillon, the fact that there was questions maybe about appropriation when doing this story today. So you can still check this out online. I'll have those details for you in a second, but here is Sophie Elisad, the director of the reading of Antioch for Talisman Theatre.
This is a story about, as you mentioned, a mother, Inas, who's an immigrant to the West, and her daughter, Lily, who was born and raised in the West. And they become estranged just because of the different life paths they've taken and experienced. And Inas sort of spends her time trying to numb herself from the pain that her life, her past life has brought her. Whereas Lily, she's at this period in her life where she's in between teenagehood and adulthood. And she's at this point where the system is inviting her in and she's resisting that. And there's a sense that she's actually seeking what her mom is trying to avoid, which is emotion and meaning and passion that she feels like her life is numbing. So they're both seeking very different things and come from very different places. And the character of Antigone, I think, is an important anchor in this piece, in that she exists in both characters in very different ways, and showcases the strength in both characters. And I think wants to make it very clear to the audience that neither Inas or Lily are right or wrong, and it's just important to hear both perspectives. So at the end of the play, Inas and Lily are sort of come face to face in what is this sort of time warp of space and time at the border of Syria, in Antioch, which is a place in Turkey. And it's only at this point in time where all the tension is brought up so high that they're able to sort of have a face-to-face conversation with each other and break down those walls, and connect and see eye to eye and understand each other. It's a very beautiful story about connection and disconnection and the importance of sharing who you are with the people you love. So that's it in a nutshell, I guess.
That was director Sophie El-Assad talking about the story in Antioch, the play that she is directing. You can catch this until December 19th. There is going to be readings as showings online at 7 o'clock until the 18th, and then a 3 p.m. matinee on the 19th. It's Pay What You Can. Tickets and more information at talismantheater.com. The other play we talked about is another online play. Well, it was filmed in various different locations and then edited and put together. Some of it has the main character on a stage and others are set outdoors. It's a personal story of sorts for Norman Navratsky, who is a playwright, performer, musician, very prolific artist based in Montreal. And he once received a postcard in the mail saying, from someone reaching out of the blue, saying, "I've seen your name before on basically roles of people that have been detained by the government." Now, Norman is going to explain to you exactly what the story was. These Ukrainian nationals, some of them were new to Canada, some had been there for a while, and they were imprisoned in camps. Here is Norman Navratsky.
It's based on a true story. I had family who emigrated to Canada a long, long time ago, dispersed all across the country. Some of them, or many, I didn't know these people. These are great grandparents and great uncles and aunts and whoever. And some of them ended up in prison. And some of them ended up in prison because they were poor, unemployed, and Ukrainian, and were rounded up during the First World War, thrown into internment camps, and their stories were never told.
Now, is this similar to what we've heard about when it comes to Japanese Canadians who were sent away? Recently, there was an apology from the Prime Minister for Italian Canadians interned just here in Montreal. They were considered enemies.
Of course. That was the second wave of cross-Canada internments during the Second World War. During the First World War, the Canadian government, for some stupid reason, but we know why, targeted Ukrainian Canadians because they mistakenly assumed that just because they had Austro-Hungarian citizenship meant they were part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which Canada and Great Britain were at war with. But they were actually Ukrainians because the Austro-Hungarian Empire had invaded, occupied, and enslaved them in Ukraine. And that's why they came to Canada, to get away from them. So,
yeah, there was a great wave of migration from Ukraine at that point. Do you know how many would have been settled across mostly the prairies, right?
Mostly the prairies. There were thousands and thousands and thousands. And they rounded up 9,000 of them, put them in jail. Another 80,000 were forced to report to the RCMP every week. And these camps were built coast to coast, 24 camps, including in Quebec, in northern Quebec, in Spirit Lake.
Wow. Okay, so we've got a lot of history to dig into there. This was obviously very compelling. Why would you choose to do a piece of art based on this story?
Because somebody wrote to me and said, "I saw your last play. I think for your next play, you should investigate this." I'm like, "Investigate what?" "We found your family name on this list of prisoners." I'm like, "What?" You know? And then I started doing the research. And the more research I did, the more involved I got. Just so happens I'm doing research for a novel based on family history, and this fit in exactly. It's like, oh my God. So that was the inspiration to do the piece, to tell the story that is little known, you know, much like residential school survivors. It's one of those stories that was buried, you know, the government hoped people would forget about it, they would go away, but the story is there. The survivors were there up until a while ago, and, you know, but the government destroyed all the documentation about it. So I had to do a lot of research.
Norman Navrotsky there. He is the creator and main performer of Run Navrotsky Run, Escape from Banff Prison. You can check this out on his YouTube page until Friday, December 17th. So tomorrow at 9 o'clock Eastern. So you want to go to his YouTube channel. It's under his full name, N-O-R-M-A-N. And then his last name, N-A-W-R-O-C-K-I. Navrotsky. So the play again is called Run Navrotsky Run, Escape from Banff Prison, and Norman shot this in many different locations and then edited and put it together online. Next up, the singer and multidisciplinary performer Mikhail Bielinski. Right now she's performing at La Chapelle Saint-Quentin-Varenne. Her one-woman show is called Warm Up. It's a commentary about the environment, overconsumption, and rest. And she's powering her own show by installing a bicycle on stage and by making the bicycle go. It's a stationary bike. She's powering everything. So I asked her about that right off the top. Here is Mikhail Bielinski.
So the first thing you see when you enter the space is a battery. You have this empty space, and the only thing you see is like it's nothing, only like this source of energy within this plastic thing, and you just see that. It's a show based on the energy, the resources. So that's the first contact you have. And then I build the set by myself. I bring the elements one by one, and I create like the electric, I don't know how to say that, but this electric buildings where you create electricity. And then I start producing with the bike.
That was Mikhail Bielinski, the star and creator of Warm Up. She is presenting this tomorrow, Friday, last showing at La Chapelle Saint-Quentin-Varenne, 3700 Saint-Dominique. For tickets and information, you can call 514-843-7738 or email beatrice@lachapelle.org. She's also working on a music album for next year, and earlier this year released her first poetry collection called Myth, preceded by Gloria. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard director Ellen David on Four Anglos Surviving the COVID Apocalypse. You can catch it this weekend at Victoria Hall in Westmount. And the Siegel Center goes to the Dogs, the Super Dogs musical. We spoke with director Sarah Rodriguez and animal trainer Danielle Pichette. You have until Sunday to see the show, SiegelCenter.org. A very big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at CKUT.ca. Under the archives. Thank you to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And a very big thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy. Next week on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca, A Christmas Carol performed by local improvisers and performers in Montreal. Have fun, stay safe this week. Up next is Grey Matters.
Tame Impala in concert. Tame Impala Slow Rush Tour. An incredible transcendent live performance. She just said, is it true? Is it true? Tell me now. It's a promise I can make. Tame Impala Class Bell, March 10th. I don't know. I don't care. Get tickets now at evinco.ca.
If you have flu-like or COVID-19-like symptoms, such as fever, cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best ways to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-COVID-19. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
And welcome to the December 16th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we have a lecture presented by Stephen Brzuszka, former emergency room physician in Seattle. It's entitled Social Murder and COVID-19. Stephen Brzuszka is on the faculty of the Department of Global Health and the Department of Health Services at the University of Washington, and he worked for many years as an emergency physician in Seattle. He's worked in Nepal for more than a decade, where he helped set up a community health project a week's walk from the road. He also established a remote district hospital for training Nepali doctors whom he supervised. So, this lecture was recorded in November of 2021 in Seattle, Washington. Here it is, Social Murder and COVID-19 by Stephen Brzuszka.
Today, we have many COVID deniers, anti-vaxxers, anti-maskers, others who don't want their freedoms to be impinged. The future for Americans looks increasingly precarious. This country is one of the most stressed in the world. Chronic stress is the 20th